and we've got lots of stuff to talk about presidents. We've got Fred Malone, and Fred knows more about presidents than I'd ever want to know. But he's going to continue on. So, Fred, pick us up where we left off.
Okay, well, we were talking about Andy Jackson, who was elected as a Democrat. His first term, his opposition opponent then was John Quincy Adams, who had been president before him. And I think I mentioned before the breaks that in that election, Jackson received roughly 640,000 popular vote, and Adams got 508,000 popular vote, and also he defeated him in the Electoral College 178-83. So he gave him a pretty good shellacking. So it's quite obvious to me that no one really appreciated John Quincy Adams and wanted him in office again.
Apparently.
since he got that bad of a beat. And again, he was only elected by the House of Representatives because there were four people running in the first time he ran, and no one was clearly won a majority vote. So that's the way things happen. Then Old Hickory, as Jackson was referred to him, by the way, he got his name from the War of 1812.
Okay.
His men said that he was as strong as a hickory switch, and it stuck with him. So, and he was a very famous individual during the War of 1812, the Battle of New Orleans. You know, after the war had been settled by treaty, he was still battling in New Orleans against the British. But that
they powdered that alligator behind and fired it off.
Well,
right?
You know, the thing of it is, as we mentioned, what we were talking about earlier. The communication wasn't as good back then as it is now, so a lot of times it took a long time for word to get from one place to the other what had happened.
Yeah.
So the War of 1812 had actually been over by treaty, and they're still fighting it in the South because they didn't get the word.
Yikes.
But anyway, he was called Old Hickory, and his second term that he ran, that was in 1832. His opponent then was Henry Clay, who was a Democrat-Republican, and Jackson was still a Democrat. Now, in that particular election, and Henry Clay, by the way, was representative in the Congress, in the Senate, so he was a popular figure at the time. But Jackson beat him, popular vote, 687,000 to 530,000, and he won the electoral vote, 219 to 49. So he was a clear-cut winner in both cases. And he was a very popular individual. And I don't know how many people remember, but there was a story that clouded his election the first time around, and it was kind of a sad story to begin with, but it stuck with him and kind of overshadowed his entire life. And it involved his first lady.
Okay.
And I'm just going to quickly talk about this because I think it's important for people to know this. Jackson was not married, and prior to being elected president, he had been staying at a boarding house in Nashville, Tennessee, run by a woman by the name of Mrs. John Donaldson. And he had a daughter by the name of Rachel. And Rachel was a very beautiful woman, and she caught Jackson's eye.
Uh-huh.
Rachel was the estranged wife of a guy by the name of Lewis Robards from Kentucky. Now, Robards had started divorce proceedings and then dropped them without his wife's knowledge. Believing that the divorce actually had been finalized and gone through, she married Jackson in 1791.
She's a bigamist.
Well, she didn't know it.
Yeah.
2 years later, the couple was startled to learn that no divorce had been granted and that Robards was now seeking one in the grounds of his wife's adultery. It was granted, and Rachel and Jackson were remarried after the divorce was finalized. However, all of her life, Rachel was unjustly slandered for her too hasty second marriage.
Oh, my.
And it was an issue during both of Jackson's elections, both the first term and the second term, and it made him so bitter over the fact that they kept calling his wife an adulteress.
Yeah.
It actually led to her death very early on. Well, actually, before he was inaugurated, she passed away.
Oh, boy.
Because of all the cruelty that existed over this whole thing with the divorce. And it was clearly not her fault. It was her first ex-husband's fault.
Yeah.
So, but he survived and was a very good president. Now, our eighth president, Martin Van Buren, who was a Democrat, had one term only, and he defeated William Henry Harrison, who was a Whig. Now, in that election, Martin Van Buren had 762,000 votes, and William Henry Harrison had 548,000 votes. And this was the introduction of the first Whig candidate.
What year was
for
this?
President. This was in 1840.
Okay, 1840. So Ohio was already a state by then.
Yeah, and I think I just gave you the wrong totals here.
Oh, no!
Yeah, I did. Let me reiterate. William Henry Harrison's 1,275,000.
Oh, that's a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. And, I didn't. I'm sorry. I was right the first time. I'm looking at the second term.
You got to change those glasses.
My eyes are getting confused here. Yeah, it was 762,000, 548,000. Okay. Right. But this was the introduction, the first introduction of a Whig candidate. You're going to see a few more Whig candidates now as we progress.
Yeah, I remember the Whigs. Yeah.
And the electoral vote was 170 to 73. Now, the second time Martin Van Buren ran for president, which was obviously 4 years later, he was defeated by William Henry Harrison. So they just flip-flopped, okay? First time he won, second time Harrison won. This time, Harrison's vote totals was 1,275,000 to 1,128,000, and in the Electoral College, 234 to 60. So he really gave him a shellacking the second trip around.
We've added some more states, obviously.
Absolutely. More states were added by that time. The Electoral College has grown, and the popular vote now is starting to show up, where more people are actually starting to vote.
Several million now.
Interestingly enough, Martin Van Buren, and we talked a little bit about this earlier when you asked about the birth of George Washington, Martin Van Buren was the first president out of eight so far that was not a British subject.
Is that right?
Yeah. Huh. All seven previous presidents had been British subjects under the auspices of the crown.
Okay.
We had a visitor coming in, I think.
Okay.
All right. So, William Henry Harrison, defeated previous president, Martin Van Buren, by a pretty good margin, both. He was referred to as old Tippecanoe.
Yeah.
Remember that? Tippecanoe?
Sure.
And the slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler too.
Yeah.
And the Tippecanoe came from the War of 1812. Now, he was a Whig, as I mentioned. He was the first Whig candidate that we would see, and we're going to start to see a few more. And John Tyler, his vice president, was also a Whig. Now, interestingly enough, he only survived a short time in office. About 30 days after he was sworn in, he contracted, right after he was sworn in, he gave about a 2.5-hour speech at his inauguration, and it was a cold, rainy, wet day, and he contracted a cold, which turned into pneumonia, which eventually killed him after 30 days. Almost 30 days to the day that he was inaugurated, he died.
I read somewhere that being president of the United States is the most dangerous job in the world because, like, there were a quarter of them have died.
Oh, absolutely.
In office,
from one way or another.
Yeah.
So really, there wasn't much to talk about as far as his presidency was concerned, because he was sick for the entire 30 days, and then succumbed to the illness.
Who was his vice president?
John Tyler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So John Tyler, if you remember John Tyler, I mentioned, was one of the four that never was elected president.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh. He succeeded his boss, William Henry Harrison.
Okay.
So we'll talk just a little bit about John Tyler. not too much, because, again, he was not elected president, but he did serve in that office for practically the entire time. Just lacked a month of serving the entire 4 years.
Yeah.
He was referred to as Honest John. He was a rather tall, thin man with a high-bridged nose and blue eyes. He was very kind, well-mannered, but was very mediocre in his appearances and so forth. When he got the news that Harrison had passed away, he was actually on his knees shooting marbles with his children in Williamsburg, Virginia.
That's cool. No,
he wasn't playing golf. He's shooting marbles with his kids. He didn't even know that Harrison had been sick And he was notified by the Secretary of State, who galloped into his yard on horseback to tell him that he was now President of the United States.
Surprise!
And not a whole lot occurred during his time of office. He was rather a lackluster president, and not a whole lot to really talk about okay. the man. But he served the office well. There were no scandals involved during his time,
yeah.
which was a big thing in those days. All right, then we move on to our 11th president, Tyler being the 10th. Even though he was filling out somebody else's term, the 9th, he still had his own presidency, so he was the 10th.
Sure.
The 11th president then elected was James K. Polk. Now, James K. Polk ran against Henry Clay, whose name we've heard of before. He was a candidate once before when he ran against Andy Jackson. Polk was a Democrat, throughout Democrat, and Clay was a Whig, our second Whig candidate. And in that election, Polk narrowly defeated him in the popular vote, 1,337,000 to 1,299,000, so only about a 38,000 margin, which is fairly close. And in the Electoral College, 170 to 105. Mm-hmm. So he was actually a pretty clear-cut winner from that standpoint. Polk was a Tennessean. Who was he? Well, he was North Carolinian by birth, and he was 49 years old when he became president. He was a graduate of the University of North Carolina. He had been in Congress representing Tennessee for 14 years, and he was a protege of Andy Jackson. In fact, he's oftentimes referred to as Young Hickory.
Oh, really?
You know, Andy Jackson
was
referred to as Old Hickory, and they referred to him as Young Hickory. It was Jackson who actually persuaded him to leave Congress, where he served as the as a Speaker of the House, and run for governor in Tennessee. He didn't really want to do it, but he did, and he was elected. But then two later attempts, he was twice defeated. During Polk's time, one of the main things that occurred was the Mexican War.
Oh.
And we're going to see some candidates for president emerge from the Mexican War, from their exploits in the Mexican War, later to become candidates for president. So not a whole lot really to talk about there, not much controversy in the election or anything like that. Now
we're going
to
blow right through this break because you got something going good.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Not a whole lot going on there. The election was pretty forthright. No controversy to speak of between the two of them. And so we'll move on to the election of our next president. I will add this. When Polk was running for president, he pledged that if he were elected president, he would only serve one term.
Oh.
He would not be a candidate for reelection. And he held true to that promise.
Huh.
He did not even seek the nomination of his party to run for another term. So, hey, we got an honest president there. Said, I'm going to do something. And he did it.
Good.
So, moving on to the election of 1848.
Are we ever going to get Clay as president?
No.
The reason why I ask that is because there's a Clay High School in South Bend that I used to play against.
Again, he was a very popular figure in a day. He was a member of Congress for a number of years. He was, I think he was a Speaker of the House at one time.
Uh-huh.
He was very well-spoken, well-educated. Very popular individual, but he could not win the presidency, as were a lot of other people that you thought might have won the presidency. But no, he never did.
I slowed you down there. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. So moving on to the election of 1848, we have Zachary Taylor. An individual who served during the War of 1812, who earned the name Old Rough and Ready.
Yeah.
Have you heard that? Old Rough and Ready. He was also a Whig. Remember, we've got Whigs going here. We had John Tyler, we had William Henry Harrison, now we got Zach Taylor as a Whig. And Old Rough and Ready was a very prominent figure in the War of 1812, got that name because he was always down in the trenches with his troops. He would sleep on the ground, you know, with them and do whatever it took to lead the men on. So that's where he got that name.
Okay.
His opponent, Henry Clay. Oh, I'm sorry, that back up. His opponent, Lewis Cass, who was a Democrat. Again, Taylor was a Whig. In that election, Taylor received 1,360,000 electoral votes, and I'm rounding these off.
Sure.
To Lewis Cass, a Democrat and member of Congress, 1,220,000 votes. So not a huge margin, but still clear-cut margin.
Now, Cass is not a name I've heard of.
Cass was not. He was a member of Congress, but not a very prominent individual.
Okay.
Prominent enough in the Democrat Party to be selected as their nominee, but that's happened a number of times over the years.
Sure.
But in the Electoral College, 163 to 127, so clearly a winner.
Yep.
And again, back in those days, you did not have to attain a certain number of electoral votes. You just had to have a majority.
Yeah, okay.
Like today, you have to have at least 270 to win. Back then, it was just a clear-cut majority.
Okay.
He served from March of 1849 and died July the 9th of 1850 after an illness of only 5 days. So he was really only in office a little over a year and a half.
Another one bites the dust.
Another one bites the dust. Again, not a lot occurring during his time in office.
He didn't have enough time to do much.
Well, true. A year and 6 months. Did want to mention, again, that... not only in the War of 1812, but he was a hero in the Mexican War.
Okay.
And he had also been a part of the Black Hawk War, which, if I remember correctly, Lincoln was a part of the Black Hawk War.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I think Lincoln served as a lieutenant in the Illinois militia, something like that.
Okay.
But he did earn some fame from that. But again, such a short-lived time in office that...
Yeah.
He really wasn't able to do a whole lot. And the thing of it is, and I have not been able to find out from my research what the illness was. They just said it was a short-lived illness. He got sick, and 5 days later he died. So,
yikes.
Yeah, you know, not much to talk about there. About lost that. And again, as I mentioned early on, Millard Fillmore, who was his vice president, succeeded him. And Millard then served from July of 1850 up until the end of the term, 1853.
I used to think Millard Fillmore was the most obscure name of a president, but there are a lot of presidents that the names are obscure.
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing about Millard Fillmore was he was a rather quiet individual. Let me see if I got something here I wanted to mention about him. He was very unassuming. He was very handsome.
Oh, was he?
It was said that he was more presidential looking than obviously Zachary Taylor was, because old Rough and Ready looked pretty old Rough and Ready.
Yeah, he did.
And James Polk and John Tyler and William Henry Harrison were all pretty rough looking guys, mm-hmm. if you've ever seen their portraits. But Fillmore came along and he was very presidential looking. He was.
Well, people say Harding was handsome.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
And again, he was very tall. He was over 6 feet tall. He was an individual that had gained a lot of respect. Credit given to him, he came from a very impoverished home to rise to a very high office. He was actually one that was born in a log cabin,
really,
in New England, in the Finger Lakes region in New York. So he was one of those individuals that that really never sought the presidency. And when he finished his term, he did not run for re-election or election in his particular case.
Okay.
So he was one of those ones that I mentioned early on that
didn't get
succeeded
voted.
But
yeah.
Never ran on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see, what time we got here? We got about 20 minutes, don't
yeah,
we?
25 sure.
minutes.
Yeah.
You can do your next break because I'm about ready
break.
To take a break anyway.
Okay.
So now that would take us from Millard Fillmore up to Franklin Pierce.
Okay.
A lot of interesting stuff going on with Franklin Pierce.
Now, Franklin Pierce is not one of the more famous name presidents.
No, he really isn't. But there's some things we'll talk about here a little bit about him that made him controversial. Franklin Pierce ran for president, was elected in 1852. He was a Democrat. His opposition was Winfield Scott. That name may be
yes,
familiar
it does.
To you.
Yeah.
He was also a Whig.
Scott,
Whigs are still there.
Wasn't Scott a Supreme Court judge at
I think
one point?
He was, yes. Yeah. I think he was, now that you mentioned that. In that particular election, he had 1,600,000 popular votes to 1,386,000 popular votes for Winston Scott.
Now we're getting a crowd to vote.
Now we're getting more people voting. Yeah. And the electoral votes are starting to pick up, 254 to 42. So okay. We're starting to see a little bit of an increase there, a little bit more than the previous. And Scott, of course, being a Whig, carrying on that tradition of Whigs, and I might add that Winfield Scott was the last Whig to run for president.
Well, now, wasn't the party of the Whigs, didn't that turn into the party of the Republicans?
Basically, yeah. Yes. Okay. Basically, yes. You're absolutely right. So again, Pierce was a Democrat. Now, in that particular election, Franklin Pierce was actually a dark horse candidate. He was our first dark horse candidate.
Okay.
And he really had no ambition to become president. He didn't want to be president.
Stumbled into it. Huh?
He didn't want to be president. He actually said that the office would be utterly repugnant to my tastes and wishes.
Oh, my.
But they still nominated him instead. He made no speeches during the campaign.
And he won.
No speeches. He was the most unambitious man who ever ran for the presidency. Yet he was elected by the most sweeping majority, 254 electoral votes to 42, since the second election of Monroe.
Tell him you don't want it, you get it, right?
The reason, first of all, there was his opponent, who was a pompous, very vain, inglorious man by the name of General Winfield Scott, whose career, who was really now most forgotten, was in the Mexican War, and that was basically his only qualification, that he had been a part of the Mexican-American War and was well known for that.
Yeah.
Secondly, the Whig Party, which Scott represented, faced both ways as usual. In trying to please both North and South, the Whigs pleased no one.
Yeah, yeah.
So he wasn't getting any help there.
It was right before the Civil War.
The party was disintegrating anyway, and its two greatest leaders, Clay and Webster, had both died during the 1852 campaign. So the country, having had 3 years of Whig rule under the unsatisfied leadership of Millard Fillmore, was ready for a change, and almost anyone could have beaten Scott.
So that's not a good
In picking Pierce, the Democrats put up a man who had a good military record. He'd served in the Mexican War. He had an attractive personality. He had no troublesome political record. And as a candidate, he supported the Compromise of 1850, which was the big chief issue of the day. And the South liked him and the North tolerated him, mainly because of his Yankee background. And he only lost 4 states during the election.
Huh.
So, Handsome Frank, as he was referred to, Handsome Frank. And he was a very handsome individual. He was a genial fellow. He liked parties and was probably had more personal friends than any other president.
I could have been
but
president.
But before and after. His lifelong friend was a novelist, Nathaniel Hawthorne, a classmate of his at Bowdoin College. They both attended Bowdoin College and graduated there in 1824. And another campus friend of his was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He wasn't a very big man. He was medium height, slim and erect, and he had become a member of Congress in the United States Senate before and after the Mexican War, before he went back to New Hampshire, where he practiced law. Now, one sad thing to mention about Franklin Pierce.
Okay.
And this is sad. He and his wife were on their way by train to the inauguration. And on their way, the train derailed.
Ooh.
During the derailment, their young son, Benny, and I think Benny was only 4 or 5 years old, suffered a debilitating, deathly injury. The top of his head was taken off during this train ride. Their only son, their only child, was killed on their way to the inauguration. So from day one of the inauguration, his whole time in office, one term only, his wife, his first lady, was in total mourning.
Yeah,
she never went out of mourning in the entire 4 years because of Benny's death.
Yeah.
So it started off as a man that did not want to be president, had no ambition to be president, didn't do anything to advance his cause to be president, suffered the greatest loss of his life before he was inaugurated president, and merely floated through the office.
Gee, that's a sad tale.
It was a sad tale. Yeah. It was a sad tale.
Wow.
So, moving on.
I think we know this next one.
Yeah, we do. Moving on to our next election, James Buchanan, who was a Democrat. His first term in 1856, his candidate against him was John Fremont, who was a Republican. James Buchanan was a Democrat. He whopped him, you might say. His total popular vote was 1,927,000 to John C. Fremont's 1,391,000.
Well, that's not a huge whopping.
Not a huge, but one of the biggest up until now. About a 500,000 vote margin. But not so much really in the Electoral College, 174 to 114, which wasn't a huge margin of victory, but still enough to, again, gain a popular majority. So James Buchanan, a very interesting individual, who took office as a lot of states were talking about secession.
Yeah.
We've already got a problem going on with
states' rights.
That's
why we know this guy's name. Yeah.
We've already got a problem going on with states' rights. We've got this issue that now North Carolina, South Carolina are both talking secession. They're talking to the other states in the South, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana. They're talking to these other states about seceding from the Union because there now is a very wide divide in the country over the question of slavery.
Right.
Buchanan is our first president elected who is a bachelor.
Yeah.
Never been married.
And remains a bachelor all his life.
Remained a bachelor. Nicknamed Old Buck.
I didn't know that.
Buchanan. Again, not necessarily sure where his party was coming from when they gave him the nomination. He was a delight of political cartoonists. There are a number of political cartoons drawn of him. He was the last president to wear a stock. A stock is... Are we coming up to a break? A stock is the little point of hair that comes up on your hair, on your head. See the picture of the stock?
I never had.
He was the last one. There were other presidents that had that stock of hair that came up. So he was the last one to wear a stock. So that's what made him a fun character for the cartoonist.
Sure.
He was over 6 feet tall, blue-eyed, very distinguished. And he liked to tilt his head to one side, kind of like a Paul Parrott.
Okay.
And I'll stop right there because I know we're about ready.
That's a good point.
To do a break.
Good point to stop. We're going to go away for about 2 minutes. So if you've got to, do something, do it now.
Hey, Scott, I bet you cannot guess what my favorite type of animal is.
Cats?
No, dogs. Now can you guess what my favorite type of dog is?
Black Lab.
No, Golden Retriever. Was there any doubt?
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back here. I'm Glenn Coble. You're listening to WWGH, and we have Fred Malone here. He's given us the whole story, more than you'd ever guess about presidents of the United States. And we're going to do this in a two-part series. We're also going to, on this second Thursday of December, we're going to finish this up with the latter presidents. But I'm kind of breaking in here because I wanted to tell people, if you've got some youngsters that are sitting around and you want them to have something to listen to, I'm going to read a couple of stories. They're Thanksgiving stories, but they're directed towards the youth audience, and they're kind of fun to listen to. And I'm looking forward to, you know, explaining about one of the stories explains about where it came from, and then there's a couple of different stories that I'm going to read to you, and I hope that you'll enjoy it. But Fred's back ready, and we're let's see. We haven't gotten to Lincoln yet.
No, we're talking about James Buchanan. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on him. Then we'll talk about Lincoln. Excuse me. Buchanan was another guy. Was another one of our presidents who was actually born in a log cabin. He was the son of an Irish immigrant who settled near Mercersburg in Pennsylvania. He went to Dickinson College, so he was educated. He was an attorney. By the time he was 29 years old, he was worth $300,000.
Wow.
All earned by practicing law, which was a huge amount of money.
Oh, yeah.
In 1857, well, before that, but when he was younger.
It's a huge amount of money now.
Yeah, it really is. He was engaged at one time, but she apparently cut the engagement off. She had written him a letter when gossips carried to her a false report about his supposed philanderings.
Oh.
Now,
all
before
right.
he could set the matter straight, she actually got sick and died.
Oh.
And the tragedy basically stayed with him all of his life, and he never ever became interested in another woman after
okay.
that.
Okay, all right.
Which...
Now, you've asked me to consider being James Buchanan, and I'm not so certain after hearing this.
I have, and subsequent to his life being over, and in the past number of years, there have been historians have surmised that possibly he was a gay individual.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some supposition that because of his philanderings that she discovered, they're not sure whether the philanderings occurred with another woman
yeah.
or with another
yeah.
male.
Yeah.
So there's always been that cloud about Buchanan's sexual orientation. No proof one way or the other, and simply because he remained a bachelor all of his life doesn't necessarily indicate that.
Yeah.
But that cloud has kind of hung over his entire lifetime. But he was engaged at one time. So,
that's,
I mean,
he
did
cool.
he did have, you know, some ambition at least at one time to be involved with a woman. But
right.
I did want to point that out.
All right.
Just so we know that. But he was a very handsome man, and he did... He didn't really do a tremendous amount during his time in office, and toward the latter part of his office, the last year of his presidency, he did less. He was not helping the situation with the secession efforts. He was a Southern sympathizer.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
We're not quite sure why, because he was born in the North. But a lot of things that he did, especially toward the last several months of his term, did not ingratiate or help Lincoln at all with his problems involving secession. So a lot of the problems that Lincoln actually ran into before he was inaugurated and start serving his term were created by not just James Buchanan, but by also Franklin Pierce and a couple of other the successors, the previous presidents that came before Lincoln. So Lincoln did inherit a lot of problems that were created before he took over in the office.
Yeah,
and that just became accelerated then, obviously, when he became president. So now we'll move into our 16th president, which we're not going to get through Hayes today.
Okay.
Quite obviously.
All
running
right.
out of time.
That's all right.
But Abraham Lincoln, his first time that he ran for office, there were actually four candidates three candidates that ran. The first time he ran, of course, was in 1860. And he ran against Stephen Douglas, who was a Democrat, and also John Breckinridge, who was a Democrat. Lincoln was a Republican. The popular vote really increased by that time. Lincoln received 1,866,000 popular votes. Douglas received 1,375,000 popular votes, and Breckinridge received 845,000.
So we're up to
roughly four million people voted. Yeah. And the Electoral College was broken down in this way: 180 for Lincoln, only 12 to Stephen Douglas, who was basically considered the primary candidate of the party, and Breckinridge received 72 electoral votes. Which was kind of unusual, because Stephen Douglas was a sitting senator at the time, having defeated Lincoln for the Senate in a previous election, I think a couple of years before that. So it was kind of interesting that Douglas got so few electoral votes.
Yeah.
And obviously all of his popular votes came from states that did not have enough electoral votes to do him any good. So anyway, that was kind of an interesting election.
Where was he born or raised?
Who?
The guy you were just talking about.
Stephen Douglas?
Yeah.
Illinois.
Illinois, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was from Illinois.
Same area as Lincoln.
Well, Lincoln wasn't born in Illinois.
No.
He was born in Kentucky. But
he lived in the area.
But he lived and spent most of his adult life in Illinois, yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting that Breckinridge would have actually gotten 60 more electoral votes than what Douglas did, and about half as many popular votes. There again, you know, you don't know about how these elections, you know, we think we got problems with today's election, but look back at some of these other elections that occurred before then and what, you know, happened with those. And again, coming up with his second election in 1864, this is interesting because by that time, Lincoln received 2,216,000 popular votes to his opponent, George McClellan, who had been a popular general during World War II, during the Civil War, and also one of Lincoln's commanders of the entire Army of the Potomac during the Civil War. So they had a lot of
they had a little a falling out.
They
though.
Did. Yeah. They actually did. So they had a lot of things in common, but they did have a falling out.
Yeah.
And McClellan, very, very handsome individual, very presidential looking. And then you got Lincoln, who's like, you know,
not
a split rail fence type look. Yeah. You know, it just makes you wonder whether any of that played into it. Although, here you go, and got to point this out. During that second election of 1864, there were less electoral votes because of the South seceding.
Oh, of course there were.
Right. So here's the electoral vote. 212 for Lincoln and 21 for McClellan.
Yeah, it dropped off.
See how many
shots
dropped off? Because by that time, practically the entire South is gone.
Yeah, yeah. Huh.
In fact, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Because the Civil War is raging.
Yes. Yeah.
So in the second term, obviously, Lincoln only survives, roughly a month after, or two
Not
months
very
after,
long.
After
yeah.
being elected. Let's see, they were inaugurating in March still then, so he really didn't even get a full month into his second term before he was assassinated. And as I mentioned before, that's one of the presidents who succeeded him, his vice president, Andrew Johnson, who never actually ran for president on his own.
Yeah.
He attained the office by succeeding Lincoln.
And I keep confusing Johnson with Ulysses S. Grant. I always thought Grant followed, but I was totally wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Grant doesn't. Grant comes after Johnson.
Yeah.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
After the war's all the way over.
Yeah.
So a couple of things I wanted to mention here. It's my other notes here.
Yeah, we've got about 4 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll probably not get all the way down to Hayes.
Okay.
I'd like to, but I don't think we're going to.
All right.
With Lincoln, he had served one term in Congress early in his career, and he ran against Stephen Douglas for Senate in Illinois. In that race, I was really surprised that he did not win, because he was very popular with the people. And I wasn't able to find the vote count on how that senatorial election came out, but Lincoln had, he had been a postmaster. He'd spent time in the Illinois legislature, I think, for 8 years. He practiced law for a number of years with, what was Herndon's, I can't remember Herndon, his partner's name was Herndon, I can't remember his first name. But they practiced law together in Springfield. He did serve one term in Congress. He was a lieutenant in the militia in the Black Hawk War, which is one of the Indian wars that occurred. Yeah. So he was quite a popular individual. However, in both his first election and his second election, more so in his first, he was from Illinois, and Illinois at that time was considered the far west.
Yeah.
And because of communications and newspapers and that type of thing, he wasn't very well known in the east. So it was surprising that in a three-man race he was able to still come up on top.
Yeah.
And win that election. So but anyway, he was assassinated in April of 1865, so he wasn't able to really spend any time in office for that time. And Andrew Johnson, who was his vice president at the time, succeeded him. Now, that wasn't Lincoln's first vice president. His first vice president during his first term, and I bet you his name's going to I can't remember his name now. But he had a different Hannibal. Something Hannibal. His last name was Hannibal.
Okay.
Andrew Johnson was selected as his vice presidential running mate for his second term because he had been a senator, and he had been a Northern sympathizer. And Lincoln chose him out of the Senate, thinking that that might persuade some of the Southern states to come back into the Union again.
Didn't work, obviously.
Yeah. So anyway, he was a Southern Democrat when he was elected, or when he succeeded to office. He never ran on his own. He never spent a single day in school. He was totally ignorant.
Holy cow.
The only education he had was from his wife. His wife taught him to read. Taught him everything basically
Amazing.
That he knew. Yeah. He was a tailor by profession, and he like I said, he never spent a day in school
his
entire life. So he was self-taught and taught by his wife. He was one of the few Southern senators who actually opposed secession. And at Lincoln's request, he left the Senate to become military governor of Tennessee and was actually serving in that position when he was nominated to be vice president. So I'm going to stop there.
Okay.
We didn't cover Ulysses Grant and Rutherford B. Hayes. I did want to kind of end on Hayes because that was pretty controversial at that time, but we'll pick up with Ulysses Grant when I come back next month, and we'll see if we can't run the muck clear up to Gerald Ford.
Well,
who was also a president that was never elected.
That's true. He was. Yeah. Well, this has been wonderful, Fred. And I echo the sentiments of the lady that called in earlier and said we ought to teach this in school. I knew about one tenth of what you were talking about, and it's a wonderful education.
Well, it's
course.
Fascinating. Yeah. It's fascinating, actually. And real quickly, if we got a few seconds, I'll mention
about 10.
I'll mention next Monday or Monday, December 7th, Mike Wilson show.
That's right.
We're going to talk about Pearl Harbor and its influence on Marion.
Excellent. Well, have a good day. We'll be back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP.